Hello, and welcome to Creepycore and Folklore, the show about creatures, encounters, old tales, and myths. I'm your host, Iona Wayland, a dark fantasy author, mental health professional, and overall curious person. I want to join other spooky souls and hear about these unusual stories. One of these days, I'm going to be able to record these episodes without whisper talking to you into the microphone while my child is asleep. Let's see if I can do this before she wakes up. It's one of those bittersweet things, too, because I love how little she is, and she's so cute and tiny. And then at the same time, I want her to grow, and I'm curious about what she's going to look like when she's older. So it's about that torn, I just feel torn between like wanting her to grow up and also wanting her to stay little. But I really do love being a mom so much. Even when I have to record episodes while she's asleep and whisper talk at you. But maybe this just adds to the ambiance of each episode. Maybe this is me pretending I'm an old like storyteller and I'm like, gather around and listen closely because you can only hear this in a soft, secretive voice. But today's episode, episode 3, is about treasure, and not just any treasure, but haunted treasure. I have two stories for you. One, at least to me, is lesser known, and the other is quite infamous, and you've probably heard of it. But if not, I'll be happy to be the one that tells you about both of them. So the first one, I'm going to go with the lesser known one, at least to me. I'm sure there are people out there who have heard of this before. But it involves two things that I find absolutely fascinating. One is hidden treasure, and the other is a skeleton, or skeletons in general, I find fascinating. So let's zoom in, pretend you're looking at Google Maps, I guess, and zoom in to the United States and then to the state of Mississippi. So if you go to the Mississippi coast, there's a place called Deer Island. And it is very close to, it's the closest island to Biloxi Bay, although I'm sure I am not saying that correctly, so forgive me. Deer Island is visible from the coast and is a reserve, so it's home to many rare species and endangered wildlife. So it sounds gorgeous to me and just like wild and teeming with life. So there are two instances of this happening. I'm sure there's more than that, but two documented old instances of this happening. One is by Captain Eugene Tiblier Sr. in 1822. And then, basically 100 years later, this happened again in 1922. And then I thought this was kind of timely because I'm like, well, now it's 2022. So is this sighting going to happen again? I don't know. It's kind of cool. But there were these fishermen working for Captain Eugene Tiblier Sr. This is the original sighting of this particular situation, this particular haunting. I don't quite understand how fishing worked. I don't know how it works now, and I definitely don't know how it worked back in 1822. But what I could gather from my research is that different, like the fishermen would go out in pairs into different parts of the waters and kind of spread out that way in their little boats to try and cover more waterway so that they could catch more. So I don't know if that's true or if this is starting to get into like folktale territory, but just bear with me here. So there's these two fishermen who were on the shore of Deer Island. And they were fishing there, and while they were fishing, they heard a rustling in the palmetto bushes. And at first, they were really freaked out because they thought it was wild hogs, because there are wild hogs on the island. Side note, wild hogs are pretty territorial and very scary. I have not personally had a run-in with wild hogs, but I do have friends that have had run-ins with wild hogs, and they can be really, really aggressive and really hurt you. And so they were on edge and they tried to ignore it and like keep their distance from the bush. Oh, also another side note, I have to say, a run-in I did have was once on my one side of my family's farm. There was a rustling in the bushes, like a giant bush. And, I heard like this grunting, growling noise and the bush shook. And I was 100% certain that it was a bear. And this was in the springtime. So that's when bears come out of hibernation and they're very, very hungry. And bears don't like go out and attack people usually. Like that's not usually a thing, but I didn't want to risk it. So I just like quietly backed away, and I had seen bears in the woods by my house before, like plenty of times. So I was just like, I'm not fucking with this. I'm not going to get eaten. I'm going to back away really quickly, but slowly. I don't know, quickly, but slowly. That doesn't make any sense, but I was freaking out. And so I just like crept back, and, but it, the rustling got louder and the bear came closer, or what I assumed was the bear came closer, and finally the bushes broke open and I was ready to do the like hunker down into a ball thing where you like curl up in a ball. That's like what you're supposed to do, I guess. I don't know. Some people say play dead, other people say like curl up in like the fetal position on the ground, basically make yourself as tiny as possible. Other people say to like make a mountain lion noise at it, but I think that's nuts, so I don't know what I was planning on doing, but apparently freeze into the fetal position was my next course of action. But what came out was one of our pigs that had gotten loose. My sister was raising Gloucester Old Spot pigs. They're really these giant, beautiful, but really chunky and like teeny. Their eyes are like the size of dimes. It's ridiculous. And their ears cover it anyway. They're basically like use only their sense of smell to and touch to get to places. And they're very, very sweet. They're an endangered pig breed. But anyway, they are humongous and they like are as big as like a dinner table, basically. just like this block of pig. And it was JJ, one of the pigs that came out, and she had accidentally gotten like out of her pen and then was like loose and was just having the time of her life eating berries from the bush. I was like, get over here. What are you doing? I was so relieved. I was so relieved that I thought my legs would give out because I was so scared at first, because I was like, today's the day that you wrestle with a bear. But anyway, so I'm afraid of bears popping out of bushes. These two poor men are afraid of wild hogs popping out of bushes. Both are horribly scary, but this was actually worse than what they imagined. So as it became louder, it wasn't making the same grunting noises like I was describing with the our pigs. So they decided to check it out because they're like, what is making that? Maybe there's an animal stuck in the bush. Like what's going on? So they part the bush and they peer in, only to find a headless skeleton that was sitting up. And when they were looking at it, it stood erect and it started to reach and clutch at them and come after them. And they ran to try and get to their boat that was anchored a little bit away from shore. And it was running after them at like a pretty intense pace. And they reported that it chased them all the way to their boat and even tried to climb up into it as they were starting to get away. Now, I don't know what kind of boat they have. I don't know if it was a rowboat. I don't know if it was a larger like fishing boat with like nets. I don't know if it was both. I don't know how they were doing this, but apparently it tried to climb up in and it like swam for a tiny bit before giving up, which is just like really haunting to think about, a skeleton coming after you like that, especially one without a head. I don't know. The whole thing doesn't make sense and is really creepy. And then when it doesn't have a head, it just adds to it. So they barely were able to get away from it. And then the same thing happened with two more fishermen in 1922. And they're the ones who looked back at Captain Eugene Tiblier Sr.'s like log of his men, that they found that there was that like 100 year ago pattern. So the background of this is actually an old pirate story about a headless ghost in particular. So there was a pirate captain who went to Biloxi Bay in Mississippi. I am almost certain I'm saying Biloxi wrong. It's spelled B-I-L-O-X-I. And I'm so sorry if that's wrong. But apparently he wanted to hide his treasure. And he took some of his most trusted men with him to go bury it on Deer Island. And when he buried the treasure, he had one of his loyal men, like he was like, oh, can you guard this? And the guy was like, yes, absolutely. And instead of like leaving him there alive to guard the treasure, he cut off his head because he wanted the loyal soul of that man to guard it. Now, this is sounding more and more to me like more of like a myth or a legend type of situation rather than something that would actually happen. Because that's a really shitty captain to just like be like, thanks for all your hard work. Now you can die and your ghost can watch over all my riches, because that makes so much sense. But that's apparently where this headless corpse came from that then decayed into skeletal remains, headless skeletal remains. So that was a story that I had never heard before. But as I was reading about it, it was pinging like the inner child in me, who I know if I were little and had heard that story, I would have been so freaked out. And here's why I find this particular story very intriguing to me. So first of all, I love the idea of treasure being out there, and seeing that like the tales of greed in this story, like there's like themes of like the greed and keeping for myself, to the point where like it haunts the actual treasure itself, with how this pirate captain was willing to kill his own men to hide his treasure. So I think that that's like, it definitely gives me folktale vibes to hear it told in that kind of way. On the other hand, I kind of have an aside about skeletons. So I think skeletons are totally fascinating, and I honestly used to be really afraid of them. So when you have a little kid who is like afraid of a monster under their bed, or like an alien that's going to come through their window or something like that, I think that's pretty normal. Like, I think lots of kids go through this. Mine in particular was skeletons, also crocodiles. It's a whole thing. I'll have to get into crocodiles another day. But skeletons in particular really scared me, because when I was little, I heard the saying that, quote, everyone has skeletons in their closet, unquote. Not understanding it's an idiom, like it's a saying, meaning that everyone has secrets or everyone has done things that they aren't proud of. But I was honest to God petrified, because I'd heard adults say it. I was like afraid of an animated skeleton in my closet that would come out and grab me at night. And I definitely had nightmares that I thought were real regarding this kind of visual. Then it was funny, because my like the adults that had taken care of me over the years, all the different adults, were getting kind of sick of me being flipped out about the closet door even being open a crack. I was like, no, there's a skeleton in there. You said that everyone has a skeleton in there, or I heard so-and-so say that. And so to try and get me to not be afraid, they said, like, Well, we all have actual skeletons in our bodies. And that is when I lost my shit. I was like, they're inside me already. Like, because I remember this being before I was even in school. So I had to be like less than 5 years old. I mean, I was like a mess when I heard this. I did not understand at all. I was like, first you're telling me it was in my closet. I knew it would get me. And now you're saying it's inside. Like, what happened? How did this happen? I told you that it would come get me. So eventually I was able to understand, like, no, like, bones are in your body and they make your bones big and strong. That's why you drink milk, all that stuff. You know, some wonderful patient soul out there helped me through it and helped me process what I was hearing. And then it's really funny because as I got older, I became really fascinated by the skeletal system and what it would look like, to the point where I even use like skull and bone type imagery in my book. I swear I'm just going to end up plugging my book in every single episode. Don't hate me. So I think that it was just like really neat that when I heard the story, when the bad guy, so to speak, was this headless skeletal like corpse, I know if I were little, that would have really freaked me out, since that was like a pain point for me when I was a little kid. So that's the end of the first story. The second story I want to go over is another haunted treasure, and this is the curse of the Hope Diamond. So I read an article about this that was very detailed, and I'll make sure I include both the one ghost story and this particular background in the show notes, of course. But the Hope Diamond is said to curse anyone who comes in contact with it and or anyone who has owned the diamond. So to be able to figure this out, like to be able to follow the lineage of the Hope Diamond, just to give you a visual, it is this gigantic, beautifully deep blue diamond. It's like so deep blue that it kind of has like a green tint to it sometimes too. Very ocean-esque colors. It originally started out as an uncut blue diamond that was 112 3/16 carats. I honestly don't know what that means. I am not a blingy lady, but I can really appreciate gemstones and things. And I know that has something to do with like the size of it. So it makes me want to see like what the average, like, I don't know, like engagement ring or something looks like. Let me look that up real quick. Okay, after a quick Google search, I found that apparently the average engagement ring, like if you're looking at a diamond engagement ring, it is in the United States, it's an average of like 0.9 carats, it looks like, which I still feel like is pretty big. Maybe I don't know. Oh, okay. So the average in the United States is about 1 carat. Wow. Okay. In the United Kingdom, it's 0.6 carats. And in Europe, it's even smaller, hovering at 0.5 carats. Okay. So that's good to know. And then this other website that says how many carats should an engagement ring be, which, okay, hold on. Side note, I love when partners share things that expresses their love. I think that's wonderful. But if anyone is using the words would, could, or should, here's my inner counselor coming out. Good Lord. But if anyone's using would, could, or should, like how many carats should my engagement ring be? I think we need to like back it up a little bit, because there's nothing that says that you have to have any kind of token item that shows love. There's nothing that says it has to be a diamond, like nothing like that. Like I know I personally have a beautiful amethyst ring. It is so pretty and it's set in rose gold and I've always loved it. And I personally didn't want a diamond, even though I can totally appreciate diamonds. I think they're beautiful. All the gemstones are like, have their own unique beauty to them. And I know there's tons of my friends have more in-depth knowledge about what each gemstone means and stuff. And I know diamonds mean love. So I think that's very symbolic and very beautiful. So that's not saying like diamond rings are bad. It's just, if someone is looking up, like, it's kind of concerning to me that this is like, how big should the engagement ring be, is like a really common search that is not of the haunted treasure variety. Okay, so back to my Google search. So one person asked, is a 2-carat diamond considered big? It said that the weight for a diamond engagement ring is about 0.9 carats. Right. Okay. So the previous article had said it's 1 carat in the US. So it makes sense that the average is 0.9, and maybe that other article rounded up. Meaning a 2-carat diamond is definitely considered big. With a 2-carat engagement ring, the diamond is noticeable and eye-catching. Okay. So that puts it into huge perspective that the Hope Diamond, which is considered a blue diamond, which is actually more expensive than a white or clear diamond. That's what the white diamonds are, clear. That a big engagement ring, like if you've ever seen someone with a giant diamond on their engagement ring, is like 2 carats. This one was an uncut blue diamond at 112 carats and 3/16. Wow. Okay. So I can't even visualize that, but that does put it better into my imagination space. So apparently, as the story goes, and as it's kind of difficult to follow the history of the Hope Diamond because it's been around for so long, Tavernier traveled to India, and it's unclear if he stole or if he bought the blue diamond, but it's said to have been stolen from an Indian god named Sita, and it was Sita's third eye. So it was plucked from the forehead of Sita. And just for quick background, Sita is the Hindu goddess and female protagonist of the Hindu epic Ramayana. So that I got that from Wikipedia, because I am a professional. But she is the incarnation of Lakshmi, which I know I've heard of Lakshmi before. I have never heard of Sita, but I have heard of Lakshmi. And she is the goddess of wealth and prosperity. So that just adds like some ante to this diamond story. Lakshmi is Vishnu's wife, and whenever Vishnu incarnates, she incarnates with him. So that's kind of beautiful, actually. I really like the idea of birth and rebirth with a particular like soulmate or something, especially when like in stories, especially when they're like meant for each other. So that's kind of beautiful. That's an aside. But so Sita's third eye, or the like forehead region, reportedly had this giant uncut blue diamond there, and either Tavernier stole it or someone who worked at the temple stole it and then sold it. I don't know which, and it gets even crazier from there. So they do think that particular blue diamond, even before it was put into set as the god's third eye, it came from the Kolar mine in Golconda, India. So I don't know where that is specifically, but it sounds like it's like from the deep earth of India, put specifically for this god, and then someone ripped it out of Sita's head, and that's what started the curse, apparently. So he eventually sold the diamond to none other than King Louis XIV. Apparently, whoever stole it, whether it was him, he was reportedly torn apart by wild dogs in Russia. But I don't know if that's actually true, because another report said that he died of old age, but it was like a painful death. And as I'm talking about really morbid things, guess who woke up? My little baby. Yes, she did. Hi, babes. Do you want to say something? She's so cute. Okay, well, I'm going to pause the cursed death talk for a second so I can take care of her, and then I'll come back and record some more. So for me, it'll be a little while, but for you, I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. Where were we? Oh man, that reminds me. It was something terrible about death. And it reminds me of that Princess Bride quote when Grandpa starts with the next chapter.
Okay. All right, now let's see. Where were we? Oh, yes. In the pit of despair.
You know the one, hopefully. Hopefully you've seen The Princess Bride. Such a classic. You want to talk about swashbuckling adventures? That's one to watch. Okay, so Tavernier died of unknown reasons. I'm not sure how he died. Some say the whole wild dog thing. Other people say, you know, that he died of old age, but it was like a gruesome death of some sort. So who knows? But he sold it to King Louis XIV, also known as the Sun King. Why? I don't know. But he loved that. But he got it recut so that it was no longer the rough uncut. It was a 67 and 1/8 carats diamond. This one was called because he wore it and had it set around these like red gemstones, and he kind of like had it on. Sometimes it would be a ribbon that he'd wear around his neck. And at this point, after he got it recut, it was known as Blue Diamond of the Crown, or French Blue. So he was really well known for wearing it. However, like many people who have owned the diamond, King Louis XIV died of gangrene. And he left it to King Louis XVI, the one who was married to Marie Antoinette. And I'm pretty sure a lot of us know how that one ended. Both he and Marie Antoinette were seen wearing the French blue. And both of them were beheaded. Lots of beheading in this episode. But both of them were beheaded by way of guillotine during the French Revolution. So after their death, it was kept in the royal storehouse. However, someone stole it from the royal storehouse, and somehow it ended up in the hands of King George IV in England. However, he was known for being one of the worst disliked politicians or people of the crown there. He became extremely unhealthy somehow, and he was blinded from cataracts, and he was said to have no heirs. And he died of intestinal bleeding somehow, and he had enormous debts. Fun times. So because of these debts, it was sold to Thomas Hope, and then to Henry Philip Hope. And this was the longest generational cycle of those who owned the diamond. It was within the Hope family for several generations. However, Henry Philip Hope died that same year he added it to his gem collection in 1939. And it's really funny because this is another aside, but it reminds me of whenever I read about how Henry Philip Hope had a gem collection that he just like kept his rocks in. It just reminds me of how my sister was like lost her mind one year when she got one of those rock tumblers, which are admittedly very cool, but she and I became convinced that we would find like a gemstone from like the driveway gravel, or like rocks that we found in the woods, or even rocks that like, I don't know what kind these are, but they're the kind where you can like throw them to the ground really hard and they split open, and it kind of has that like shiny geode type look on the inside. We were like, this is just untapped wealth right here. So we would just grab random ass rocks and throw them into the rock tumbler. And it would take way longer if you don't have those pre-prepped rocks. It like can take years for rocks to tumble. So I don't know why like we were so excited for this like finished product. And the other thing that we didn't know as children is that you can just get it cut. Like you can use, like people can use a machine that isn't a rock tumbler that can speed up that process much faster. But we were children and the world is magical, and we thought we would have so much wealth from the rocks we found in the dirt. Oh, that hope for precious gemstones. So after Henry Philip Hope died that same year, his wife fought really intensely for his estate, but ended up losing because, you know, women weren't allowed to have or own anything at all, to Henry Philip Hope's nephew, Henry Thomas Hope. And it stayed in this Hope family for so many years. However, at one point, for whatever reason, it was sold. I think the Hope family became indebted to something as well, and so they had to sell that heirloom. I mean, I don't even want to call it an heirloom because it kind of seems like it belongs to the earth, not any human, because it's outliving everybody. I mean, it is a diamond, for God's sake, but it ended up in the hands of a merchant. And then once it was in this merchant so that the Hope family could repay their debts, it was sold many times over, and it's not really known every single person whose hands it touched, I don't believe, but it did end up in someone named Abdul Hamid II. He ended up owning it, but he was in the military revolution of the last Turks. But then he was deported and his gemstone was stolen. So finally, it ends up with Pierre Cartier. And he's someone I know whose name I've learned before. I don't know much about Cartier, but I do know that he kind of had these adventures that he would document. So then the Hope Diamond was sold to the McLean family. So Evelyn Walsh McLean was said to have worn it basically every day. She was super in love with the blue diamond. However, after having this diamond, she befell so many terrible events. Her mother-in-law died. Her 9-year-old son died from a car accident. Her husband left her for another woman, and then he subsequently ended up dying in a mental hospital. They were the original owners of the Washington Post, but their family business of the Washington Post went bankrupt. Then Evelyn's daughter died when her daughter turned 25, and then Evelyn died with very significant debts. Something I forgot to say earlier, which I'm glad that I didn't hear anything bad regarding her dog, but apparently she would wear the Hope Diamond every day, and sometimes she would put it in her dog's collar, and I just really love the energy that Evelyn McLean brought to the household. She's like, I'm a fancy lady, my dog's a fancy lady too. We are all winning in this household, except for, you know, the curse. But I do love a woman who prioritizes her dog's bling. So because Evelyn died with such debts, and there was that foreclosure, and there was all this stuff going on with the family business, the family estate ended up having to sell the diamond. That's when it ended up in the hands of Harry Winston. He was reportedly a very famous jeweler. He owned Harry Winston Incorporated, and this is where he would hold charity events and have people view the Hope Diamond. And I'm sure that because the blue stone had such a storied past and there was rumblings of a curse afoot when anyone came into contact with it, it only stirred up the amount of people coming to these charity events and the viewing of the diamond. Eventually, though, he donated it to the Smithsonian Institute National Museum of Natural History, and that is located in Washington, D.C., and it is still there to this very day. What's really funny about this is I actually saw the Hope Diamond. And I remember we learned about it, but then someone in my family was saying like, oh, you know, it's cursed, right? And that's, I remember being in, I think it was fourth grade when we all went to the Smithsonian to look at it, because I've never lived too far from DC. And I remember going to it and not even wanting to like get too close to it. And you can't get too close to it. It's behind glass. It's like on like a mount, so you can see it. I remember thinking how beautiful it was, and it was much darker than I had pictured it, because I remember when I originally pictured a blue diamond, I was thinking more like a light sapphire color, but it's such a dark, rich, deep blue, and it's very beautiful. But when I saw it, I was really afraid to get too close because I did not want the curse. And kid logic, you know, like even looking at it, I mean, I could be cursed, you know. But it was so funny because when I saw it, this is so ridiculous. This just shows like how children view treasures and such. But I was really freaked out because I'm like, oh my God, I thought it was so much bigger than that. And then I started freaking out because I was like, oh my God, I own a diamond that's bigger than this. Which, okay, adult logic here, no, I didn't. But what happened was, around that time, I should look it up, when the Pink Panther came out with like Steve Martin, I think it was the Pink Panther, and then the Pink Panther diamond was like the thing. To my knowledge, the Hope Diamond is the largest registered diamond in the world. And it is like, there's nothing else bigger than it, I believe. I'm actually going to quick fact check myself. Wow, I stand deeply, deeply corrected. Actually, the largest diamond in the world is the Cullinan Diamond. And from quick Google searching, from therockher.com, it says that the world's largest diamond is the Cullinan Diamond, discovered in the Premier Mine in South Africa in 1905. Named for the owner of the mine, Thomas Cullinan, the Cullinan Diamond was a massive 3,106 carats. Okay, in its uncut state. I'm just going from learning that like 2 carats is one of those big flashy diamond like engagement rings that maybe a higher upper middle class, upper class person would wear. This is 3,106 carats in its uncut state. And it says that's 1 1/3 pounds. Holy cow. Now I want to know how much this is. These are the rabbit holes I go down. It says it is worth, in today's money, $400 million. Wow. Okay. I'm going to reel myself back in, keep talking about the Hope Diamond, but now I kind of want to know if that one has like a storied past or a cursed history, just like the Hope Diamond does. Oh my. Okay. So what was funny though, is that because the movie The Pink Panther was around, there was Pink Panther merchandise. And other side note to the side note, Pink Panther, the actual cartoon, is my favorite cartoon ever. I loved the expressions. I loved that you didn't have to hear it, but when you did hear it, it had a beautiful musical score. It was awesome. So anyway, because the Pink Panther was coming out, like the live action one with Steve Martin, I really wanted to go to it. And it was showing this like Pink Panther, they called this giant pink diamond, this Pink Panther. And because that was popular, some of the merchandise was you could buy the quote Pink Panther unquote diamond. That was actually like just a glass piece. Like it was like a glass diamond, that had a mount on it and everything. And I had seen it in a store and I was like, oh my gosh, this is like the most beautiful diamond I've ever seen in my life, thinking it's real. Cause you know, it's definitely, you're just definitely going to come across like a 2-pound diamond in in a retail store or something, but whatever. So my mom got it for me, and I remember being like, what? No, it's probably so much money. And she's like, no, I can get it. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I felt so special, and I still honestly have it. I should go try and find it. I know it's in, we moved just a couple months ago, so I know I boxed it up. Like, I know I still have this diamond, this quote, diamond, unquote. I'm going to have to take a picture of it and make like a post about it so that everyone can behold the diamond that I thought I owned. But I kept thinking, if this, because just until legit like 2 seconds ago, I thought that the Hope diamond was the biggest one. So in my elementary school brain, I was like, if this blue diamond that's puny compared to my pink diamond is cursed, my pink diamond is probably super cursed. And so then it turned into like a whole thing. Oh, also, I meant to say that in the Smithsonian, it is now no longer the original size, obviously, because it had been cut and recut and probably used to fit in different heirloom pieces and such. It's now 45 carats and it still holds that deep blue color. So that's really cool. That is the story of two different haunted treasures. One is guarded by a headless skeleton and may make an appearance this year since it's the 100th anniversary. And it seems to happen every century. The other is about a deep blue cursed diamond that seems to outlive everybody, which logically makes sense, but it is kind of fun to think about it as cursed. And I'm glad that it has a place where it kind of doesn't belong to anybody. It can just be admired. So thank you for listening to my ramblings about treasure that is hidden, haunted, and cursed. And I will talk to you next time. Thanks to all you spooky souls out there for listening to Creepycore and Folklore. Follow on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok if you're looking for more uncanny content. If you have your own tales to tell, you can email creepycoreandfolklore@gmail.com. If you liked this, please leave a review wherever you get your podcasts, or tell a friend who might enjoy these stories to spread the word. If you're interested in dark fantasy, check out my Hollowverse series. Ashes is available now in paperback and ebook on Amazon and audiobook on Audible, and the sequel is underway. I'm Iona Wayland, and I'll see you next time.